Hey there.
Hello, George. How are you tonight?
I'm just fine, chilling out in some air conditioning tonight.
Boy, it's a hot one here in Michigan today.
It sure is.
So we went through, we're working on our favorite Seinfeld episodes and went 6 through 10 on both of us. You stole a couple of mine, but I still got some nuggets that I can talk about.
Well, you
You know what
stole
I
it this
don't
time.
have, George, is do you happen to have a copy of our list of what our 6 through 10s were?
I've got mine.
Well, big deal. Okay. All right. I don't know where mine is, so I guess we'll just have to make people guess on what they were or listen back at previous recording.
Okay.
All right. Well, I do know that you stole a few of mine, so I'm going to go first. With my number five.
Very good.
And this one is called the Fusilli Jerry. And
Love that one.
Fusilli is a type of pasta. And Kramer has taken up this hobby of making statues or little sculptures out of different types of pasta. And so he makes Jerry, one of Jerry, out of Fusilli because Jerry is silly. So Fusilli and Jerry silly. So and also in this same episode thing that happens is that Kramer renews his license plates and he gets a vanity plate by mistake and it says Ass Man.
Oh, that's the ass man? Oh,
It's
yeah,
the
that's
Ass
nice.
Man.
Okay.
And Kramer is loving that. And so as he's driving around, with plates everywhere, hey, it's the Ass Man. He goes, you bet it is, stuff like that. So he's, Kramer would dig that
Oh, for sure.
absolutely. And then there's a the other part of that is Estelle, George's mother, gets a facelift, but she can't drive herself home. And for some reason, Kramer ends up driving her. And he uses what Frank thinks is his move. He doesn't stop short.
He
And
doesn't
he
stop.
reaches over and grabs in front of Estelle and grabs her breast, trying to make sure she doesn't fall forward. And Frank's pretty sure that he's trying to move in on his girl and that he stole his move.
And Estelle, she got quite a fetching look on her face, as I recall, too.
Yeah, she might not hate it as much as Frank would have thought. So Frank's not going to put up with that, and he runs over to Jerry's apartment to confront Kramer. And what is funny is earlier in the episode when Jerry, they're talking about going to dinner parties and things like that, and Jerry makes a comment about, because if you're ever at a dinner party and there's a proctologist there, he says, make sure you stand near him the whole night because they have great stories. And they all end up with, it was a million to one shot, Doc. It was a million to one shot. So sure enough, Frank goes over to confront Kramer. And they're kind of pushing each other around. And Frank falls to the floor. And he lands squarely on the Fusilli Jerry. And so they have to take him to the proctologist. And that is when Kramer is looking around in the office and he sees the doctor has a picture of a boat called the Ass Man. So he assumes that this must be his plate. So sure enough, he says, hey, you're the Ass Man. I think I've got your license plates. And so he's so happy to get those back. And then the doctor goes back into his office and you hear Frank in the background saying, it was a million, one in a million shot, Doc, one in a million. So just like Jerry had predicted. So that was the Fusilli Jerry.
With the
And that
stop.
was my number five.
No, okay, excellent. Excellent one. Okay, my number five. We're going to season four now. It was really kind of when I think Seinfeld was just really in a good stride. A lot of great shows. And this one has Jerry and the whole gang going upstate to visit the Bubble Boy. The Bubble Boy is clad. It's kind of a play on that old John Travolta TV special where he was this boy that had to live in a plastic bubble because he had no immune system. And it was this real heartfelt tearjerker. And the boy was real sensitive and he was just this wonderful person. So what happens is Jerry runs into Brian Doyle Murray, who drives the Yoo-Hoo truck. And Brian Doyle Murray says, you know, hey, Jerry, yeah, I saw you on The Tonight Show. You're really funny. You know, my son, he loves you. And, it'd be great, you know, if you can come visit him, right? You know, because they're all going upstate. And so Jerry, he's kind of really hesitant to do it, but he finally kind of agrees that he's going to go up. And he's telling George about it. And he said, I'm going to go see this bubble boy. A bubble boy? What's a bubble boy? He's a boy that lives in a bubble. Boy. And so they're going to go and do this thing because it's going to be a real kind of a humanitarian thing. They're going to go see this wonderful, probably very sensitive bubble boy. And it turns out they're going up in a couple different cars. And one of my favorite parts of the show is that, you know, this is the days before GPS. Is that George has the directions. George and Susan have the directions to this to the cabin or to the house where the bubble boy lives. And Jerry and Elaine are following up there. And Costanza's going like a million miles an hour. And he keeps looking in the rear view and he's lost Jerry. And Jerry's saying, "Where is he going? That guy's driving like a maniac." And he said, "Well, don't you have the directions?" "He's my directions." So they get lost on the way up there, and George gets up there before Jerry does. Jerry and Elaine get lost, and they end up in a diner somewhere. But George gets up and is the first one to meet the bubble boy, and then it turns out that the bubble boy is just the biggest asshole that could be. He's just real snarky and mean.
Yep.
And he's really mean to his parents, and he's always yelling at his mom.
Speaking of his parents, who's his father?
Brian Doyle Murray.
Correct.
That's right. But it turns out that he loves playing Trivial Pursuit. It's like his favorite game. So George thinks he knows he's going to beat him in Trivial Pursuit. So they play this Trivial Pursuit game. And they get down to the last question. The Bubble Boy's got one question to answer. And so George asks me, all right, Bubble Boy, who invaded Spain in the 8th century? And the Bubble Boy said, "That's a joke. It's the Moors." Which Costanza said, "Oh, no, I'm so sorry. It's the Moops." Correct answer is the Moops. "Moops? Let me say that. That's not Moops, you jerk. It's Moor. It's a misprint." "Oh, I'm sorry. The card says Moops."
Yeah,
and again, that's another one of those Seinfeld legacies that just kind of lasts forever. That anytime you hear, if you're looking, reading, doing some history, reading about the Moors are always will forever be the Moops.
Absolutely. Oh no, and I like the way, like you said, George said, "Oh no, I'm sorry."
"Oh no, no," because he said he was so smug that.
Yeah.
And
somehow the bubble starts to deflate too. I don't know. So I think George and Bubble Boy went at it, and all of a sudden the bubble got popped and it started to deflate.
Yeah, the wrestling. I think wrestling over the card. I think the Bubble Boy wanted to see the card, and they started wrestling over it. And then next thing you hear is this pop and this release of air. So they had to, I had to get rushed off to the hospital.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay, my number four is called The Marine Biologist. Kramer one time comes running into the apartment, Jerry's apartment, and Jerry and George are there. And Kramer says, "Who wants to have some fun?" And they go, "Oh, we do. I mean, who really wants to have some fun?" And Jerry says, "Well, okay, whatever, no. maybe not that bad." He goes, "I've got 600 golf balls in my trunk. And we're going to go out to the beach and we're going to hit them into the ocean."
Yeah.
"Well, okay, we'll pass on that. That's no good." So that's like the lead of the whole show. And then we see later that Jerry's at an ATM and he's racing against this woman to see who can get done the fastest. And then it turns out to be a college friend of theirs. And this woman asks about George, says, he was always such a sad sack, and did he ever amount to anything? So Jerry kind of felt bad for him. And he says, well, why, yes, he's a marine biologist and he specializes in whales. And she goes, wow. She goes, that's pretty impressive. And so she says, well, is he single? And she goes, well, yeah, he is. She says, will you give him my number? And so she gives the number to Jerry, and later in the show, George calls her, and they are together. But we'll get to that part in a minute. There's another piece of the story where Elaine is trying to court this Russian author, this famous Russian author, and what's funny is that, as a joke, Jerry is telling Elaine that, you wonder how it would turn out. The original title of War and Peace was supposed to be War, What Is It Good For? And Elaine initially doesn't believe that, but Jerry talks her into it and says, oh, no, it's true, it's true. And so Elaine relays that story in the limo when they're talking to the author, and she just about blows the whole deal. He gets all upset, and I can't believe you would talk like that. And so Elaine blew that one completely. So now we continue on, and now George is on a date with this girl that Jerry had met, and they're walking on the beach when there's like a crowd up there. And they're not really sure what's going on. And they say, oh, there's a whale in trouble. Is anybody a marine biologist? And so what could George do? But his girl, you got to impress his girlfriend. So I've got the audio of when he retells the story in the diner to everybody.
Okay.
Classic line.
Oh, yeah.
A golf ball.
Yeah. Is that a Titleist?
Titleist? So there you go.
That
may be my fourth favorite episode, but I saw an interview. Jerry said that that was his all-time favorite episode.
That was probably one of Costanza's greatest moments, that soliloquy at the end.
Yeah.
And that episode really, really right from the start to the finish is a really well, the whole thing is just like a well-told joke, you know, right from the start of Kramer wanting to hit balls into the ocean all the way to the conclusion. It was really.
It is that when they're sitting at the table there at the end like that, you know, you do yourself, if you have ever seen it, go to YouTube yourself. But like the look on Kramer's face when he pulls out that golf ball. You've never seen a guy so sheepish in your life.
Well, I'm going to have to tell you right now, that was my number three. So.
Okay.
So so
I gotcha.
You got me. So I was kind of basically just kind of going to go over basically what you did. So that was a good one. I'm not surprised that one was high on your list as well.
So look at that. So I was four, you were three, Jerry was one. It's like we're in synchronicity here.
I think so.
Okay, so we know you're three, but what was your four?
My four was from season eight, and it was the Yada Yada.
Okay.
So this is an episode where, a couple things happen in this one, but the Yada Yada refers to the idea of telling a story and wanting to kind of to cut through a lot of the detail and just get to the final conclusion of the story. So whenever you're going, you just kind of go and then yada yada yada, this thing happened. So what happened is George is dating this girl that yada yada is a lot of her conversations, and George finds this to be pretty convenient as well, because this is the season right after Susan died from licking the envelopes. And girlfriend starts asking him, you know, well, what happened to Susan? And he says, well, you know, yeah, we were going to get married. Then we got the invitations and yada, yada, yada. We're not together anymore. So he kind of like yada, yada his way through Susan's death.
Yes.
And so then the girlfriend kind of says to him one day, says, oh, yeah, I'm so tired. I saw my old boyfriend last night, and anyways, yada yada yada, I'm tired today.
Right.
So George is now all upset because he thinks that his girlfriend is seeing her ex-boyfriend again. And one of the great lines is, I think Jerry says, well, you wouldn't yada yada sex. And Elaine says, oh, yeah, I've yada yada sex before. And he says, really? When did you do that? And he says, well, I was dating this lawyer guy one time. We went out to dinner. I had some lobster bisque. We went back to my place, yada yada yada. I never saw him again. Jerry said, you yada yada the best part. She said, no, I mentioned the bisque.
Yep. So, yep. That's a beauty line, man. So many good lines in this show. It's crazy.
And there's one other great part of that episode, unrelated to that, is it's one of the Bryan Cranston episodes where he appears as Tim Whatley, and Jerry goes to see him, goes to the dentist, and Tim Whatley starts telling Jewish jokes, and Jerry's a little uncomfortable about it, but then Tim Whatley says, "Oh no, that's okay. You know, I converted to Judaism, so you know it's like, you know, we're part of." They're my people now, so I can tell the jokes. And Jerry gets really upset by it because he thinks that Tim Whatley converted to Judaism just for the jokes.
Right.
And then Whatley starts telling Catholic jokes, and Jerry says, you know, what's the deal? And he says, oh, well, I was raised Catholic, so I can tell Catholic jokes too. So Jerry says, this is what this guy's after. He's after complete joke immunity. If he gets Polish citizenship, there's no stopping him.
Yeah.
So, anyways, a couple of good story threads in the yada yada. So that was my number four. Three, as we know, the marine biologist, which we've covered. So I think we're on to your number three.
Okay. Well, my numbers three, two, and one were all mentioned yesterday. But but you left me a couple of loopholes that I can still talk about.
Okay.
So number three is the bottle deposit. And just to, very quickly, it was the whole scheme for Kramer and Newman. They're going to take the – well, the beginning of it is kind of funny. Newman misunderstands the whole thing. He's drinking Mellow Yellow all through all this. He loves his Mellow Yellow.
Yeah.
And he throws one in the garbage can. And Kramer says, what are you doing that for? He goes, I'm not going to pay that 5 cents to bring him back to recycle it. And he goes, no, you don't pay the 5 cents. You get the 5 cents. So that's what piques his interest. And then he asks about the 10 cents and all that. And we already covered all that. And then, so they finally find a good time to do that. They are, another part of it is that we already talked about is when Peterman wants Elaine to bid on JFK's golf clubs, he gives her a limit of $10,000. And Sue Ellen Mischke, the O. Henry candy heiress and Elaine's arch nemesis, is there. And so they're just bidding against each other, and she can't stand to let her win. So she ends up bidding $20,000 for the clubs.
Yeah.
And now she's going to leave the clubs in Jerry's car because she can't get them right then and there. And then Jerry takes his car into the mechanic. And if you'll recall back to our very first episode, the mechanic was Tony, and he was played by Brad Garrett. But I picked him to be my closer because he was big, tall, intimidating guy. And he cared a lot about the game, about the cars and things like that. So anyways, to make the long story short, you had talked about how Newman ends up going to the house of Ron Howard's father, and he gets in trouble because he's fooling around with the farmer's daughter.
Yep.
But how does Newman get to the farmhouse is because Jerry and Kramer are communicating, and they have to make a decision. Are they gonna go do the bottles because they don't have enough gas to make this? Because he's getting off in Ohio, they don't have enough gas to do both. And Jerry's imploring him to follow the car, so Kramer does. And now they're gonna have the fuel problems, so Kramer goes back and he's throwing all the cans out the back of the mail truck. And Newman says, "We're losing all our inventory. We're losing the whole point of this." And then he stops and pulls over. And he says, "Newman," he goes, "I think there was a sign back there that said free pies half mile back." So Newman's excited about that. He takes a look, and Kramer kicks him out and closes the door and takes off. And Kramer tells Jerry, he goes, "We got rid of the fat man and we're running lean." So they had to lost weight to carry. And then meanwhile, the Tony the mechanic is throwing the golf clubs at the mail truck to try and slow down Kramer, and he gets away, and Elaine asks Kramer to at least grab the clubs. It's always like pulling them out of the grill of the mail truck, and they're all bent up, and the $20,000 purchase is a total waste. So, and that's a great one. I love that one.
Now, I think a little bit of trivia here. I believe, and Seinfeld was a show that relied on telephone humor a lot. They were always on telephones. And I think that might have been the first episode that featured cell phones. Cell phones
very
are now,
well could be
ubiquitous now, but I think back then cell phones were still somewhat of an oddity in the mid-90s. And I think that was the very first time that you saw cell phones on Seinfeld.
Hey, I have to back up for a second. I forgot when I was talking about Fusilli Jerry. I think it was season six. Anyways, that was Putty's first appearance on Seinfeld. Oh. Was in that season six episode.
Oh, great character.
Speaking of mechanics. So, okay, so that was my number three. So we're on to your number two.
My number two is one that you had. I think it was your seven or eight somewhere. But it's the library. Absolutely loved this episode. I think Lieutenant Bookman is probably my all-time favorite single episode character. played perfectly by Philip Baker Hall, doing a just an absolute perfect deadpan Joe Friday as he starts running down this book that's been missing since 1971. And I think you'd mentioned that you might have a clip for this one. So I don't know if you do.
I do. Are you ready for it?
Oh yeah, go ahead and roll that up.
Okay, so this is Bookman in Jerry's apartment. This is the first time they've actually met, and so here we go.
Well, I'm glad you're here so we can get this all straightened out. Would you like a cup of tea?
You got any coffee?
Coffee?
Yeah, coffee.
No, I don't drink coffee.
Yeah, you don't drink coffee? How about instant coffee?
No, I don't have.
You don't have any instant coffee?
Well, I don't normally.
You don't have instant coffee?
I don't.
You buy a jar of Folgers crystals, you put it in the cupboard, you forget about it. And later on, when you need it, it's there. It lasts forever. It's freeze-dried. Freeze-dried crystals. Book out in 1971.
Yes, and I returned it in 1971.
Yeah, 71. That was my first year on the job. Bad year for libraries. Bad year for America. Hippies burning library cards. Abby Hoffman telling everybody to steal books. I don't judge a man by the length of his hair or the kind of music he listens to. Rock was never my bag. But you thought when you walk into the New York Public Library, fellow.
Look, Mr. Bookman. I returned that book. I remember it very specifically.
You're a comedian. You make people laugh.
I try.
You know, it's all a big joke, don't you?
No, I don't.
I saw you on TV once. I remembered your name from my list. I looked it up. Sure enough, it checked out. You think because you're a celebrity that somehow the law doesn't apply to you, that you're above the law?
Certainly not.
Well, let me tell you something. You know that little stamp? The one that says New York Public Library? Well, that may not mean anything to you, but that means a lot to me. Sure, go ahead and laugh if you want to. I've seen your type before. Flashy, making the scene, performing convention. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. Is this guy making such a big stink about our library books? Well, let me give you a hint, too. Maybe we can live without libraries, people like you and me. Maybe. Sure, we're too old to change the world. But what about that kid sitting down, opening a book right now in a branch of the local library and finding drawings of peepees and wee-wee. And the five Chinese brothers. Doesn't he? If you think overdue fines and missing books, you better think again about that kid's right to read a book without getting his mind bored. Or maybe that turns you into maybe that's how you get the kids. Good time, buddies. Well, I got a flash for you, Joy Boy. Is over. We have 7 days, Seinfeld. That is 1 week.
I've never read anything if they got through that in one take or what, but man, never cracked Bookman.
He stayed in character the whole time, and Jerry, if you watch Jerry in that scene, he can barely just keep from busting out laughing. And I think that,
well, Bookman even has that line where you think this is funny, you're a comedian, because Jerry's got a big old smile on his face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he kind of works it in. Sure, go ahead and laugh. Yeah.
Right.
So I mean, he's, and just the fact that he stayed in character, so well, and just kind of played, and he could see Jerry cracking, and he just kind of played right off of it. And it was one of the greatest moments in all of Seinfeld, I think.
Monologue, along with the marine biologist when George is. Those are two of the best, two of the tip-top best ones in the whole show.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, my number two was mentioned by you yesterday, and it was the Merv Griffin show.
Okay.
When Kramer finds the Merv Griffin set, and he's teaching everybody as if they're a guest on the show. There's one part that we didn't talk about. It's like Jerry and Elaine were in there, and Jerry is talking to Elaine. Right. Kramer goes, we talk this way. You know, you wanted to talk to him because he was the host.
Yeah.
So there was the thing about the toys. Jerry had a girlfriend with all the toys. And so they're feeding her turkey and wine and knock her out. But two parts of that we didn't talk about. We did talk about the Gotcha show, how Kramer got Jerry to admit about drugging his girlfriend and then cheating him out for backstage.
Yeah.
But George's part of that episode was when he was driving with his girlfriend and he ran over some pigeons. And his girlfriend was all upset about it. And he goes, we have a deal with the pigeons. He goes, they're supposed to get out of the way. And we overlooked that whole statue thing.
Yeah.
And he, another time, so his girlfriend was so upset with him. They're driving again. And he swerves to avoid hitting pigeons. And he runs over a squirrel. And he goes, hey, we don't have any deals with squirrels. But she's so upset that they get the squirrel, have to take it to a vet. And he's asking the doctor, well, how much is this going to cost? And he said, well, we have to get special small squirrel surgical implements. He goes, it's going to be quite costly. He goes, well, how much to not just kill him? Or, and the doctor goes, about $1.69. But his girlfriend was not having that, so they had to take care of the squirrel, and George got stuck with that deal.
Yeah.
And then the other part of that was Elaine had the sidler at work, the guy that would sneak up beside her and take credit for maybe things that he was doing. And so she finally gave him some Tic Tacs, and so she could hear him walk around the office. And Peterman says, what is that noise coming from? It's driving me crazy. We have to get rid of that. And so she has to take the Tic Tacs away from her, from the sidler. And so he begins to be able to sneak up on her again. So that was kind of one of the Seinfeld words too, is the sidler. And I've used that before when somebody kind of comes up out of nowhere.
It sidles up to you. That guy was creepy too. He had a real weird, creepy smile.
Well, he had a dead tooth. That's why he had to have the Tic Tac.
Oh, there was one other part of that I kind of forgot about too. And this is if you have the DVDs, and a lot of the DVDs will have these inside looks where the cast members will talk about these episodes. There was one part of that show where Kramer, when he was hosting the show, he went to a commercial break and he kind of says, "All right, let's take a short break."
Uh-huh.
And he just kind of pauses. And he takes a big drink of pop, and he starts chewing down some bag of chips, and he does that for 30 seconds, and everyone's just kind of looking at him, and then he stops. And he says, "Okay, we're back." There were some blooper reels where Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Jerry were sitting next to each other, and they couldn't keep a straight face. They were just every time they cut that scene, they just lost it. And they kind of say that was Michael Richards' greatest moment.
Well, one of the best bloopers I ever saw was, we were talking about an episode yesterday about the homage to Ferris Bueller, when they're in the police station and Elaine and Frank are kind of going at it. And there's plenty of bloopers for that because, Frank was fine, but Elaine could not get through that at all. Okay, so that was my number two. We need your number two, I guess, huh?
My number two is the library. We got that one.
Okay, so
number one.
So I guess I'll go. You, number one was in year 6 through 10, but you left some gaping holes. So this is okay. It's good. I'm not mad at you.
Oh,
my
good to hear.
All-time favorite, without question, this is by a mile, is a two-part episode called The Boyfriend. It's the one with Keith Hernandez. And we've already covered them about how they're getting Jerry and Hernandez are almost kind of in a relationship where he's helping them move. And George says, next thing you know, you'll be driving to the airport. He's I'm not driving to the airport. And then the whole thing about Elaine, telling him he's not going to get to first base. But the two big parts of that were when they talked about Keith Hernandez, it was how much Newman and Kramer hate Keith Hernandez.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Because they went to a game, and the Yankees – or yeah, the Mets were ahead in the ninth inning, and he made an error, and it led to, five runs, and the Mets lost. So after the game, it just happens to be that they walk past Hernandez kind of in a crowd, and Newman goes – nice game, pretty boy. And the next thing you know, there is both Kramer and Newman get hit with spit. And so they're certain that Hernandez had spat upon them. So this is where Elaine had never heard that story before. So Jerry goes into a great explanation about it. And it's, you know, it's very similar to the Kennedy assassination about the magic bullet. So now we're talking about a magic loogie, and maybe was somebody, you know, on the grassy knoll. Maybe it was a second spitter.
It was a second behind the gravelly road.
Oh, behind the gravelly road. Okay. As he tells the story, you know, same thing, like how the spit stopped in midair.
Yeah.
The 90-degree turn, and then hit Newman in the wrist and stuff like that. Just silly questions like that. And as we find out, Roger McDowell, indeed, another Met player, was behind the gravelly road, and he really was a spitter. It wasn't Keith Hernandez at all.
So Keith Hernandez got vindicated.
Yes, he did. So the other part of that show is that George is on unemployment, and he's trying to make nice with the unemployment lady. He even dates her daughter, you know, and stuff like that. But she needs him to be out interviewing. And George says, "Well, I'm actually very close to a job right now." He goes, "Oh, what's that? Who's that with?" And he goes, "Vandalay Industries."
Yeah.
He goes, "Really? What does Vandalay Industries do?" He goes, "Oh, they're in latex, import and export of latex."
Yeah.
And she says, "Well, what kind of job are you looking for there?" He goes, "I'm going to be their salesman." So she says, "Okay, well, as soon as I get done with you, I'm going to call over there." And she and George gives the lady Jerry's apartment phone number. So he's running over there, and he runs in the door and says, he goes, "Vandalay Industries, if anybody calls for Vandalay Industries, it's for me. It's going to be my unemployment lady. So make sure everybody answers Vandalay Industries. Got that? Vandalay Industries." So George goes in to the bathroom, and Jerry leaves the apartment, and Kramer comes in. He's sitting on the couch, and the phone rings, and you can tell that somebody's asking for Vandalay Industries. And Kramer goes, "What, Delay Industries? No, you're way off. I've never heard of that." And George hears that, and he comes running out of the bathroom and goes, Vandalay Industries. And because his pants can't quite up around his waist yet, he falls. And there he is laying face down on the floor. Jerry walks in, sees that scene. He goes, "And you want to be my latex salesman?"
I think
that's one of the best lines ever.
Oh, that was a class. And I'm very glad that you had that on your list, because yeah, those are glaring omissions that I didn't talk about. But yeah, the allusions to JFK and Vandalay Industries.
There was a lot going on, and then we heard about Vandalay a few times after that.
You know, there's one other part of that one that always really liked. And it was early in the episode when they're at the gym and they're playing basketball. But you know, they were in the locker room kind of winding down, and that's when they first see Keith Hernandez, and they look, "Hey, you see who that, you know, that is? That's Keith Hernandez." And then Keith kind of notices them, but I can't remember how it was, but he refers to George. He says, "Who's this chucker?" And so they kept, a lot of times through the episode, they keep referring to George as a chucker.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a strange word. And it's like, you know, they don't really define what a chucker is, but I think we all know what a chucker is. Because I think
they're playing basketball, so that's what made him a chucker.
Yeah, we've all played basketball with a chucker, right? It's just some guy that gets the ball, and every time he gets it, he just chucks it up there.
Right, and George looks to Kramer for some support and says, "I'm not a chucker, am I?" And he goes, "Oh, you're a chucker."
Yeah.
Just the way Kramer could do it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's my number one by miles and miles and miles, George. What's your number one favorite episode?
Well, my number one, this goes back to season two, and this is probably when I very first started watching Seinfeld, and I think the reason it's number one because when I watched this show, I think it's the first time I realized that this was something unlike anything on TV. From season two, it's the Chinese restaurant. And the Chinese is a very minimalist type episode. It was an episode that they pitched to NBC saying that we want to do an episode where it's, and it wasn't, Kramer wasn't even in it. It was just George, Elaine, and Jerry. And the pitch was, we're just going to go to this restaurant and we're going to just wait. And we're going to do a whole episode about just waiting to get a table at a Chinese restaurant. The networks thought they were crazy. And I think Larry David actually threatened to quit if they wouldn't let him do that episode. So Larry David actually just staked his whole career on this episode.
And very early on, too, right? So is this season two, you say?
This was season, like halfway through season two.
Wow.
They weren't a ratings smash yet. They were still trying to kind of find their legs. So it was really a gamble they took. But basically, the whole episode, it is just that. They're going out to dinner. They want to get a table fairly quickly because afterwards they're going to go see a movie. And the movie is Plan 9 from Outer Space. It's playing at this one theater for that night only. And Jerry really wants to see it because it has the reputation of being the worst movie ever. And so he wants to go with his friends so they can call and just kind of sit there and make fun of the movie. But they put their names in for a table and they can't ever get a table. They see all these other people getting tables. At one point Elaine starts talking about, and I kind of jotted some of this down, but she says, you know, it's not fair. People are seated first come, first served. It should be based on who's hungriest. I feel like, and then she's looking at these people eating dinner, and he says, I feel like just like going over there and taking some food off of somebody's plate. And Jerry says, tell you what, there's $50 in it for you if you do it. She says, What do you mean? He says, you walk over to that table, you pick up an egg roll, you don't say anything, you eat it, say thank you very much, wipe your mouth and walk away. I give you $50. and George says, yeah, what are they going to do? Jerry says, they won't do anything. In fact, you'll be giving them a story to tell for the rest of their lives.
Uh-huh.
So Elaine says, should I do it, George? And George says, for $50, I'd put my face in their soup and blow. So I think it was after that, I just, I knew that that show was going to be something special. And one of the things that really dates the show now is one of the main, George's main storyline in that is he wanted to place a call to his girlfriend, Tatiana, and there was a payphone that he couldn't get to because there were just these people that kind of kept, getting to the payphone before he could get to it. So, you know, these days that would never happen, right? Because everyone's walking around with their own cell phone. But back then, the payphone became kind of a central part of the episode,
right?
So, but I just love that very minimalist approach. It's not unlike there's a play called Waiting for Godot, which it was written like back in the 1950s, I think. And that play was just about two people waiting for a guy named Godot who never showed up. And it's just the whole play was them sitting around and just having these existential discussions about, you know, about life and everything, which is kind of what this show was. It was kind of the first show about nothing.
Now, but wasn't the maitre d' at the restaurant there? Wasn't he calling out a name to try and get their attention at one point?
So there was one. George's girlfriend called the restaurant, and James Hong was the maitre d', by the way, and he's also one of my favorite one episode characters. But so Tatiana called the restaurant, and the maitre d' calls out Cartwright.
Mm-hmm.
You know, George's name is Costanza, so he's not paying attention to him, and so then the maitre d' hangs up. George goes over, asks if there's any calls. He says, "Oh yeah, there's a call for Cartwright." And he says, "But I'm not Cartwright." Excuse me. He said, "Yeah, it was a call for Cartwright," and Jerry says, "But you're not Cartwright." "Of course I'm not Cartwright." But the whole joke was that the guy just kind of blew George's name, and then he missed the call with the girlfriend who he'd been trying to call all episode.
Yep. Okay, so you mentioned that Kramer was not in the Chinese restaurant, which is very rare for all four of them not to be in there. Kramer almost was also not in one other episode, and that was The Pen, when Elaine and Jerry went down to Florida to visit his parents. And George was also not in that episode. And Jason Alexander was so mad that he said if he was ever left out of another episode, he would quit.
Yep.
And the only episode that Elaine was never in was she was not in the pilot. And NBC said it was, the show was too male-centric. So when they sent it back for more shows, they said, we need to put a female in there. So that's how Elaine was born. And I think Jerry and Larry were a little bit nervous about that because they didn't know how to write for a woman.
But you know, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I think, is one of the funniest comedic actresses of all time. And she was the perfect cast for that.
Oh, and she's done a lot of shows, and she's done well. But this is funny, George. Now, if you were just a guy who didn't watch and love Seinfeld as much as we did, there's three shows that I think everybody on the planet is aware of from Seinfeld, and they didn't make either of our top tens.
Yep.
Can you guess what those three shows were?
Well, one of them's got to be The Soup Nazi.
Absolutely, The Soup Nazi. And that show was good, but I didn't think it was top 10 worthy. Okay, there's two others.
The Contest. Or did you do The Contest?
No, we didn't do The Contest. The Contest, probably the most popular episode amongst most Seinfeld fans, probably one of the most popular sitcom episodes of all time.
Yep.
And we had no room for it. And I didn't forget about it. I mean, I left it out. I mean, I thought there was funnier episodes than that.
I would think there's a couple, because I've got like a lengthy honorable mention list.
Okay, but there's one more.
Okay.
I want you to try and guess. One more that everybody would know about, even by if you didn't watch a lot of Seinfeld.
It's going to be one of two. It's either... I'm going to say The Parking Garage.
It's not The Parking Garage.
Okay.
What's your second guess?
The Hamptons.
No, that's a good one too. That's one with the shrinkage, right?
That shrinkage, yeah.
But I think it's the puffy shirt.
Oh yeah.
You know, everybody knows about that.
Yeah.
You could buy the puffy shirt. I think one of the years, whatever season the puffy shirt was in. If you bought the box set, you got a little miniature puffy shirt with it.
Yeah. And the puffy shirt is in the Smithsonian.
Okay, so run through quickly through some of your honorable mentions, and I'll let you know if I gave them any consideration.
Yeah, well, one was The Parking Garage, where they spend the whole episode. It's a little like the Chinese restaurant, where they spend the whole episode looking for their car, walking around a parking garage.
And Kramer's carrying like an air conditioner or something.
Yep,
right?
He's carrying air conditioner, and Elaine's carrying a goldfish that dies.
Right. Okay.
The mango, I think was a great one. That's where Elaine talks about how she faked her orgasms with Jerry, and Jerry is just extremely upset by that.
Okay.
Did you have the outing? Was that in your top 10?
Yep, that was on mine.
Okay.
Yep,
okay, that was another one of my honorable mentions. So and The Good Samaritan. These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Oh, is that what that episode was called? Yeah,
that's
a great line too from the show.
Yeah.
And Kramer had the part in the Woody Allen movie?
Yeah. And then so they all take turns, you know, saying how they would deliver the line.
Right.
And that was, yep, that was also, that episode also had the husband or the wife that sneezed, and the husband didn't say God bless you. So then George said God bless you instead. And then I think he ended up having an affair with that woman because she found him to be so sensitive.
Okay, that must have been the one. I don't know what episode this was, but it's something I do to Sarah all the time. So it must have been, this is probably one of the episodes when George, I'm sorry, when Jerry was doing his stand-up, like his bookends, you know, before and after the show.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how when a person sneezes, you know, you say gazoon,
yeah,
or God bless you. And he didn't think that was correct. He says, you know, they feel bad enough about sneezing. He goes, I think that you should say something like, you are so good looking.
Yep, that so, was the same episode.
Okay, good. Because every time Sarah sneezes, I go, you are so good looking. And she's one of those people that sneezes like two or three times in a row. And so each one, I have a little bit less enthusiasm for how good looking she is.
Yeah, she's just fishing for compliments now.
That's right. Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. All right, George, I think anything we throw out there with Seinfeld, we could talk forever. This has been our longest episode, but it's been it's our best topic without question. We're going to take a little bit longer time off because my son, Andy, who was a guest star on one of our recordings, is getting married on Saturday.
The logo episode. Yeah. Okay. Congratulations, Andy.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Congratulations, Andy. And we offered a steak dinner for anybody who knew that trivia question, who our first guest was. And at the baseball game that we all went to, Paul Ferioso was your big winner. Paul Ferioso. Oh, okay. So stop those cards and letters coming in because we already got a winner.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Have a great night, and I'll talk to you later.
All right. You too, man.
All right. Bye.
Bye.